Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girls start much too late. All the sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Ah, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done. Only the good die young.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Michael Walden. You're listening to Ask the Blood Detective. Today's show, nutritional endocrinology. In other words, how can we use lifestyle in its various forms to manage our hormone levels, to optimize our hormone levels, and perhaps to reduce our risk of hormone-related cancers and to deal with those cancers and other health problems that are hormone-related. I think it's true to say that almost all of us, certainly over the age of 40 and in many cases far earlier than that, begin to experience hormone imbalances. Now, I don't want to skip by that word hormonal imbalance. What we actually mean there is, well, on the surface what it sounds like, that there are just an inappropriate levels or relationships, I should say, of different hormones. So an imbalance could mean that hormone levels are deficient relative to one another, or hormone levels are affected by what is known as tissue receptivity. In other words, your hormone levels could be high, and because they're high in your blood or your saliva, but particularly in your blood, because the blood is what contacts cells. If your hormone levels are high in the blood, maybe your various tissues have created resistance to the hormone. So a high level, in other words, does not mean that you have enough of that hormone or that hormone, in fact, works. Now, let's take that notion of hormone insensitivity a little bit differently in the other direction. If you have low levels of hormones, whether they're in the blood or saliva, your body might actually be using the hormones just fine, because over the course of time, as hormone levels are declining for any reason, whether it's natural or just simply unnatural, tissues and the receptors on the tissues, on the cells, will increase their sensitivity to hormones because the levels are low. So let me say this again. A low level of hormone, whether absolutely clinically low on any test or, let's say, low normal, the body could adapt over the course of time and is actually using those low levels fine because it's taking those hormones up. It's much more receptive to them. But on the other hand, as hormone levels might increase, like estradiol levels, the so-called bad estrogen, or testosterone, or DHEA, it doesn't matter. As these hormone levels increase, a smart body, the body's innate intelligence, would generally become somewhat more or less resistant to the increasing levels of hormones so that the cell can regulate its use of the hormone. So whether the hormone level's high or whether the hormone level's low, the tissue's sensitivity or relative resistance to the hormones is adjusted. Now, what am I getting at here? You know, as the blood detective, and during every one of my shows, I've talked about the proper use of laboratory to measure things. Not everything is accurately measured through testing. There's all this talk about hormones, since that is the topic today, and how saliva testing is the best. This is a false statement, because that depends on the individual. It depends on what hormones we're talking about. And even if it were true to say that saliva levels of hormones are the best test, for those of you out there who are not familiar with this, there are practitioners who promote the use of salivary hormones versus blood levels and even urine levels. And I'm simply saying that depending on the health problem and other factors, different types of tests, again, whether blood, urine, and saliva, or a combination may be necessary to really get a clear picture of hormones. However, remember what I just said about hormone resistance or relative resistance. Let me summarize that. When hormone levels go up, 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 unnaturally speaking, the body might develop a bit of a resistance to them to use and regulate its use of the increasing level of the hormone. And on the other end of the spectrum, as hormone levels decline, let's say with aging, cells in a smart body would increase its sensitivity to the hormone so that its cellular loss is relatively stable or ideal for whatever the body's up to that day. So when I do my blood detective longevity profile on people who are interested in hormone balancing or somehow needing to block or improve the effects of hormones, let's say for longevity purposes, it's always important to consider the issue and then pick out the appropriate tests. Also, questionnaires are very important as well, but only in context. In other words, you could imagine that there are all sorts of symptoms that might be caused by hormone deficiencies. Let's say fatigue and brain fog and memory loss and loss of reaction time and or strength, quality of the skin, hair, nails, teeth, the list goes on and on. But those symptoms could be from any single hormone deficiency or relative deficiency. In other words, the relationship between the balance of hormones might be off. So just going by symptoms alone is simply not enough, particularly if there is some sort of chronic or very, very serious health problem like cancer that you're dealing with. So I open the show by saying that just about all of us by age 40 and usually even by age 30 start to experience biologic decreases in hormones or imbalances. We may not have symptoms at all at that time. It might take 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years for those symptoms to show up. And the environment, of course, is one of the factors on top of our genetics that will contribute to hormone imbalance. You know, we're exposed to countless number of environmental and dietary compounds and toxins, which would exacerbate what we might call the normal decline of hormones and accelerate an unnatural decline of hormones. It's my opinion that almost none of us age normally from a hormonal perspective. And from a longevity perspective, in other words, quality of life and offsetting our risks of disease, I believe it's absolutely necessary to use naturally oriented approaches to optimize hormones. I am not in favor of first jumping to hormone replacement. And for those of you interested in bioidentical hormones, you might be thinking, well, what about natural or bioidentical hormones? They're just like the ones the body makes. Well, sometimes there's a reason why the body decreases a hormone. For example, the body might decrease testosterone or estrogen levels. Those are two hormones found in both men and women. Women tend to have, of course, higher estrogen levels and lower testosterone, and men tend to have higher testosterone and lower estrogen. But my point is that our bodies are genetically programmed to diminish the production of hormones, and again, maybe for offsetting one's risk of cancer. But more often than not, at least in my 26 years of experience dealing with the natural hormone concept with many patients, I find that most people are not aging gracefully. You know, in my anti-aging show and my longevity show, which you can find on the archive on PRN.com or PRN, that is, FM.com, or on my website at www.integratednutritionny.com under the blog section, you'll see those radio shows, and they'll talk about one of the major theories of human aging is the hormone decline theory. We need hormones to revitalize and repair our tissues. All the hormones work in concert, by the way. It's not like there's a place in your body where, you know, estrogen lives and there's another place where pregnenolone lives or androstenedione or DHEA or et cetera. You need to think of hormones, I believe, as a soup. And in a soup, an actual soup, if you alter any one ingredient in that soup, what will happen to the entire taste of the soup? It will alter. So it's very important, at least in my blood detective approach, to consider the balance of a variety of hormones. And a balance, that term is a very relative term. A balance for one individual, let's say with breast cancer or prostate cancer, would be to have a very low level of estradiol, as low as possible. And, of course, to retard the production, the body's what's known as endogenous production, inside the body's production of both testosterone and estrogen. So this brings me to another what I call blood detective clinical pearl, important concept. balance of hormones is not related to some ratio or some normal range or even optimal range on some test, whether it's saliva, blood, or urine. It must be relative to the health promotion, the health goals, the health project, if you will, at hand. I would also invite you to consider that hormones can, or hormone imbalances of any type, can create virtually any health problem or symptom, any sign or symptom. So I call hormones and hormone problems the masquerader of many diseases, whether it's perimenopause or andropause in men or menopause in women, or those are the obvious hormonal problems, right? Or estrogen-sensitive breast cancer. There are other health issues like metabolic syndrome, high cholesterol, fertility issues, bone density, chronic inflammation that could be from hormonal imbalances. Now, I should say at this point, and I'll be reiterating this throughout the entire show today, hormones are affected by a multitude of factors, such as diet, emotional and physical stress, toxins, genetics, medications, the list goes on. And the symptoms could be anything from difficulty losing weight, difficulty keeping weight off, loss of energy, hair loss, excessive hair growth, low sex drive, high sex drive, depression, manic moods and mood swings. Sleeplessness can also be from a variety of hormonal imbalances. And by the way, remember, hormones exist in a soup in the body. There's never any such thing as a single hormone imbalances in that model, in that holistic perspective. In traditional allopathic medicine, OBs and endocrinologists tend to think of hormones as if they exist in a singlet state, somehow removed from their relationships of the other hormones that they're balanced against. But that's absolutely wrong. That basic physiology teaches us. I learned this both in nutrition school, and I learned it in medical school, and I learned it in chiropractic school. Physiology is physiology. They all work together. There are what are known as positives and negative feedbacks among certain hormones. Quick example, if you were to take thyroid hormone, whether it's the synthetic form, Cytomel, which is T3, or Synthroid, which is a combination of T3, T4, or even natural armor thyroid or nature thyroid, it doesn't matter if it's natural. It will still have what is known as a negative feedback loop with your thyroid gland. So if you're taking thyroid hormone, for example, that's exogenous from outside your body, there will be a negative relationship to your thyroid hormone production in your thyroid gland, and your thyroid gland shrinks, it atrophies, it withers away. And the longer you're on thyroid hormone, or any hormone, by the way, with the exception of growth hormone, there will be this phenomenon that I've just explained of negative feedback. It's just a fact. Now, that list of symptoms that I had just gone over, you know, weight gain and energy, hair loss, memory problems, cancer, by the way, cardiovascular disease, yes, there's almost always some hormonal issue. But those hormonal issues, again, you need to think in a blood detective way, would not always show up as a problem with the level of a hormone. Remember, the level tells you nothing about the sensitivity of the body tissues to the hormone. So, for example, if you have memory issues, or there's dementia, or Alzheimer's disease, just outright extreme memory problems, the brain has estrogen receptors. If those receptors get screwed up in some way, if they deform, think of a receptor and the hormone that works with the receptor in the brain, and this is true, by the way, folks, for any tissue in the body, as a lock and a key. The key is the hormone that we're talking about, and the lock is the receptor. So every tissue in the body, without exception, goes by this what is known as lock and key sort of concept. Now, you know that a key might get jammed or somehow may not work in the lock. So that would be equivalent to in the body of hormone receptor damage. Now, in the body, if that hormone cannot fit in that lock, then that perpetuates this hormone resistance, and the brain will not get its estrogen, which it needs to build up memory neurons. So what I've just said here is quite a lot, but it should also point out to you that estrogen is not always bad. I may mention this later in the show, but there is no estrogen. There are estrogens. There are three major estrogens, and then there are metabolites of those estrogens, and they have different effects. And nutrition in the form of diet and nutritional supplements can affect and does affect, has been proven to affect, the levels of the bad and the good estrogens. By the way, very quickly, estrone is E1. Estradiol, which tends to be the bad estrogen, is also called in biochemical circles E2. Estriol is E3. Just a little bit of biochemistry there for you. So how do we fix hormonal problems? By just taking a hormone? That's like trying to fix a hole in a boat that's floating in a lake by putting your finger in it. Well, yeah, you might, depending on how far out in the water you are, if you've got 10 miles to go, I think you're in trouble. You know, we want to fix the hole. So we don't simply give, let me restate that. We don't simply want to block the hole. We want to repair that hole. In the body, though, any hormonal problem or any hole in the hormones affects a multitude of tissues. So we need to, I at least, review many, many symptoms through what's known as a blood detective longevity questionnaire. I review all major systems of the body, because when you look at the body as a whole, and I know this audience in particular understands this, you can see things you cannot see when you just look at one area or system of the body. You know, if you have bone loss, osteoporosis, or osteopenia, there may be hormonal issues all over the body, and they may just show up, obviously, on a bone density test. But if you just take a bone density drug and you don't repair the hormonal system, which, by the way, depends on the liver's detoxification of hormones and metabolism of hormones, as well as the intestinal tract's metabolism of hormones, and how the rest of the body tissues receive and produce hormones. So we have to look at everything. It's just the way the body's designed. And I would submit to you, and this is my personal opinion in how I approach individuals with hormonal, so-called hormonal issues, we need to look at everything at one time. Yes, we want to do certain analyses. We can't just base our health or our hormonal repair on symptoms that go away. Many people have, again, heart disease from hormonal problems, and they don't know that until they get a stroke because of a clot, let's say, from production of either too much estrogen or the body is too receptive to the estrogen levels it has. So I think you get the picture. So I figure out the types of tests people need based on a comprehensive review of all systems. And again, before we go to providing hormones, I would like to see if the person's body can produce, balance, and favorably metabolize as naturally as possible the hormones it makes. If that fails and someone's health issue is so severe that they need some sort of relief that natural health and natural approaches could not provide, then, yes, maybe we look at bioidentical hormones. But remember, bioidentical hormones are still not your hormones. There's more to say about that. Comparative testing, comparative questionnaires are important to check progress, not just subjectively how you're feeling, but also objectively what's happening with the chemistry. When nutritional supplements are used, whether they're proteins or amino acids or herbs or phytonutrients or vitamins or minerals, what have you, the highest quality must be used, because any compounds that are unwanted in products, and many of the store-bought brands of products are just loaded with undesirable compounds, then that itself can offset hormones. I did a show where I think it was called Vitamin Lies, and in that show I discussed a survey that the government had done, I believe it was 2015, and they looked at a variety of supplements available in stores, many different stores, under different labels. Now follow this. The same supplement could be under 100 or 200, 300, 500 different names from different places. In other words, from different stores, because they may come from the very same supplier. And if the supplier has a poor quality product, it doesn't matter what you hear on the radio or read on the web or what the supplement company tells you and how great their websites are. The quality of supplements are problemsome. So you need to discuss with a trusted healthcare provider what the best supplements are from what sources for you, not just because you heard that they're really, really good. We need to question that. A health program which involves exercise and fitness specific for hormonal issues is important. Exercise affects hormonal levels. Hormonal levels affect the quality and gain from exercise. So sometimes a very structured and personalized nutrition planning is needed. And of course, stress is a major factor, and not just emotional stress, but physical stress. The stress of aging naturally and unnaturally, the stress of toxins, the stress of all of your other health issues, all of these stressors affect and are affected by hormones. So let's back up and let me give you the design or the structure of what is known as the endocrine system so that you can have a structure to visualize what I'm talking about on a little bit more carefully. So there are several glands in the body, what are known as the major glands, that make up the human hormonal or endocrine system. I'll just mention them briefly. There's the hypothalamus, there's the pituitary gland, there's the pineal gland. Of course, there's the thyroid gland and the parathyroid glands. There are the adrenal glands, all of the reproductive glands, including the ovaries and the testes, and also the pancreas. The pancreas is not only an endocrine gland, meaning a hormone-producing gland, but it is also a digestive gland. So digestion affects the pancreas and is affected by the pancreas, which in turn affects hormones. You can never eat anything without affecting hormone levels, right? Think about it. Glucose, when your glucose level goes up and down, you're concerned about blood sugar and prediabetes and that sort of thing. Glucose doesn't just move on its own. Glucose is moved down in the blood, and I'm oversimplifying here, but this is accurate. The levels are reduced with insulin. You can remember it this way. Insulin puts glucose in the cell, insulin in the cell. Glucagon does the opposite. So glucagon, which is a hormone made by the liver and also is stored in the liver and the muscles, increases glucose levels when we need them. There isn't a process or any sort of degenerative health problem or healing response that you could tell me that is not either affected by hormones or affects hormones. And in turn, none of that stuff is unaffected by diet, including supplements. So we have a tremendous opportunity when used correctly and in a personalized way to manage hormones for longevity, general health and well-being, and to reduce the onset, delay the onset of chronic degenerative problems. Look, we have to die of something sometime, but I don't know about you. I'm going to go out feeling great. That's my goal. I compare my laboratory work to tighter, healthier ranges, and I do this with all of my patients. So I have a computer software program that I've been working on and using in clinical practice for over a decade. And when it looks at all the different chemistries on the blood work, even if your blood work is essentially normal, it may not be normal compared to my healthier ranges, but those healthier ranges potentially can reveal lots of opportunities to manage hormones, not to mention other health issues. So if you've been told that your blood work is unrevealing or it's essentially normal, or you do have some abnormal, some highs and lows on your testing, but you know your doctors or practitioners haven't made any big deal about it, and you still are suffering from issues that you suspect are hormone related in some way, shape, or form, I don't see how they could not be, quite honestly. And by comparing those tests to healthier ranges could be extremely revealing. So let me outline for you right now different ways to manage hormone balance. Now, essentially speaking, there's just too much disease these days that are affected by estrogen, and particularly estradiol, or 17-beta estradiol. It's a bad estrogen. Testosterone, by the way, produces estrogen in the body. It produces all three types of estrogens, and it's nutrition that can help push your body's metabolism of estrogen in one of those three directions to affect health problems in very different ways. But whenever I approach someone with hormonal issues, I'm always looking on average to lower estrogen levels. And the right type of nutrition can do that. We need to focus on, obviously, the health of the gastrointestinal tract, particularly the colon, not just the small intestine, but the colon. Very briefly, some explanations of about 7 or 10 bullets I'm going to give you right now. Gut health. The gut is where estrogen may be metabolized. If there's not enough fiber in the diet, for example, to bind to estrogen, then that estrogen in the colon could be resorbed back into the body, raising the blood levels. That's just one example. Also, there's detoxification pathways in the intestinal tract and in the liver that metabolize the different hormones, particularly estrogens. So we need to specifically target those pathways. So we need to optimize the diet. So what's an optimal diet? Well, there's no such thing. There are certain basic concepts in the diet that I personally believe are important as just a baseline for hormone balancing. They include, of course, not to overconsume at all any refined and processed sugars or carbohydrates, and to have, if you're going to eat meat, it should be, you know, grass-fed organic meats, because many of the chemicals that are either fed to these animals and or that they eat in the grasses and other food will alter potentially hormone levels. We want to, of course, eat much lower down on the food chain, lots of fruits and vegetables organically whenever possible, because pesticides, herbicides, fungicides can and have been proven to adversely affect hormone levels. Overall, we need to figure out the diet, though, based on one's actual biochemical needs, not these general things that I'm mentioning now. Those are a baseline, yes, but then they need to be personalized. One of the ways we personalize is through testing, but also we need to have a goal of reducing body fat to healthy levels, because high levels of body fat increase what's known as aromatase enzyme, and that will increase estrogen levels and testosterone levels. Back to plant foods. In this day and age and in this environment, I am of the opinion one cannot ideally manage hormones simply by eating lots of fruits and vegetables. We need superfoods. I've designed what I call detox 1, 2, 3, and 4, which are powdered concentrates of vegetables and fruits. By the way, they will not adversely affect blood sugar, that contain tens of thousands of phytonutrients, many of which have been shown to beneficially affect the metabolism of not just estrogen and testosterone, but other hormones. So a single scoop, let's say, of this might be the nutritional equivalent of eating, you know, a tableful of fruits and vegetables. When we want to have changes in hormonal levels in our lifetime, sooner than later, we need to use superfoods. We need to improve estrogen metabolism specifically. I'll talk more about that in a minute. We need to promote colon elimination, not by just doing colonics. That fixes nothing. I'm not saying that's useless. There are times, perhaps, when we want to use colonics, but I invite you to listen to my Detox Deception show, where I talk about the positives and the many negatives of just doing colonic irrigation. You need to take nutrients like superfoods and other concentrated forms of vitamins and minerals and herbs probably 3 or more times a day in some cases. Why? Well, for example, estrogens that are synthetic, that are produced from, for example, industry, that are in our environment, in our air due to industrial outpouring, are known as xenoestrogens. So these are extremely active estrogens. There are hundreds, if not 1,000 times or more potent than the estrogens made in the body. Now, if you want to block the effects of these hormones that you're breathing in on your cell receptors, see how you understood that now, right? A little chemistry doesn't hurt. If you want to block it, you might consume flavonoids. And flavonoids are these very important natural compounds or phytocompounds, meaning they're found in plants, and you need big doses of them. They only last in the bloodstream about 2 to 4 hours. So taking them once or twice a day is not going to cover your constant exposure and daily and lifetime exposure to xenoestrogens or other toxic chemicals like cadmium in the air. Cadmium mimics estrogen many hundreds of times. So the nutrition has to target. There are general things to do first, like superfoods, like my detox 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, which provides the proteins and amino acids for specific hormonal detox pathways called cytochrome P450 pathways. Why am I telling you this detail? Because if you think you're going to detox, let's say, estrogen with bentonite clay or an ionizing foot bath or a low-temperature sauna or any single thing, it's not going to happen. It cannot happen. Again, listen to Detox Deception, you'll see. But it is possible to make this happen if you target it correctly. We need to, of course, limit our exposure to these toxins whenever possible, but sometimes that simply is not possible. So we need to take our nutrients 2 to 3 times a day because the half-life of some of these nutrients, meaning how long they last in the blood, needs to be sustainable. Now, those flavonoids I just mentioned, which are compounds that you find in virtually all plant foods, if you take, this is important you hear this, let's assume for a moment that you absorb normally. Now, if you're over 50, you don't, no matter how you feel. 60% of people over age 50 do not absorb normally, and they also don't detoxify normally. If you eat, let's say, 1,000 milligrams of flavonoids, once that goes through your detox pathways in your liver, the yield in your blood is roughly half of that. And that's if you absorb great and you have no other health problems. So the thing is, you have to take the right dose. How do you know the right dose? Well, a variety of tests, but also an examination of your lean body mass. The lean body mass, what's also known as the free fat mass, is used, at least by me, to help determine the dosing of different supplements. A simpler way of thinking about it would be if someone's a very large person, they might need more nutrition to do the same job as someone who's not as large. But body size is a bit deceptive because body size is not a predictor of detoxification ability. Now, in my Detox Deception show, I gave a lot of practical detail in the blood detective style, so to speak, of what the actual detox pathways are and how they are known to be supported in physiology textbooks. We actually know. But all too often sometimes I see people coming to see me where their protocols, what they're doing and eating and living and supplements, they're so cliche. They're not based on proper evaluation. And these individuals have wasted months and years and tens of thousands of dollars on natural supports that are just off. So I mentioned before, there's all sorts of symptoms of hormonal problems, energy, healing. Remember, hormones heal tissues. When hormone balance is correct, which implies that nutrition balance and lifestyle must be balanced, then the reparative process in the body, this is important, the reparative process will exceed the disrepair process. So it's important to keep in mind that, you know, what hormones actually are. They are substances. They're produced in an organism like you. You are an organism by various tissues, and they need to stimulate certain cell receptors in certain tissues to different degrees. So in other words, and I'm making this up, but here's just an example for illustration. The skin receptors are very susceptible to estrogen. So there are many estrogen receptors on the skin. That's why you might have heard that when estrogen levels drop, the skin might wrinkle and get dry and lose its elasticity. When the skin loses elasticity, that's a sign that arteries are losing elasticity. Why? Because there are estrogen receptors, well, this is one reason, in both arteries and in the skin. So, but not to the same degree. So my point is that, one, you need to know that all tissues have receptors for hormones. Two, that all tissues do not interpret the hormone receptivity equally. It can change from day to day, week to week, and hour to hour, depend on many different factors. So a goal of my approach, at least with people, I cannot speak for other natural healthcare providers, is to quote-unquote, balanced hormones for that individual. Balance does not mean that blood, simply mean that blood levels are normal. That has nothing to do with balance, particularly if you have, let's say, an estrogen or a testosterone-related or promoted cancer. You want very, very low to no detectable levels of certain hormones. And then you might suffer from other symptoms of hormone deficiency, which in many cases, natural therapies can help manage. Now, the hormones provided in traditional medicine are mostly of the synthetic type because, well, for a lot of reasons. First of all, they're extremely potent because they're made in the lab to be potent, and they do work for symptoms. But they can promote potentially many different types of health problems, especially cancers. Now, bioidentical hormones are also now used these days by some traditional doctors. But keep in mind that a lot of what they call bioidentical hormones are still synthetic. They're made in the lab. Or maybe they'll use, let's say, wild yams or sweet potatoes, and they'll take compounds in those plants that, by the way, are not hormones, but they look similar. They're very similar in structure to estrogen and other hormones. But in the laboratory, those so-called natural hormone, I like to call them hormone precursors, because there's really not a lot of actual hormone in any plant foods. Contrary to what you have heard, there are no phytohormones. There are phytoprehormones. There are plant precursor chemicals that when treated in the laboratory with certain enzymes, they can become hormones. And then they're packaged and marketed as bioidentical hormones in both natural healthcare, natural medicine, and allopathic circles as well. So this is one of the key reasons why I prefer to try to invigorate and repair the body as much as possible so it produces its own hormones, because there's just no way anything from the outside, I don't care how natural one claims it is, can match what your body could potentially make. So let's get back. Let's talk about, you know, men and women again. You know, I said earlier that both men and women make estrogen. You know, estrogen is produced not just by the ovaries in women, by the way, and the testicles in men, but also estrogen in both men and women are produced by the brain. Interesting. So if a person has brain atrophy, let's say from a lifelong deficiency of fatty acids and not enough neurotransmitters, then even if the blood levels of estrogens are fine, the brain is not going to take it in, or the brain will not produce its own estrogen, which it must to maintain neurons. So the brain, which is the central intelligence of your central nervous system, which controls every organ in the body, must be a target of, at least it's one of my targets, of hormone balancing. You rarely hear, I've never heard this, of an OB or an endocrinologist or even some natural health care providers talking about the nervous system or the nervous system repair or gut repair. That's more common, but certainly not nervous system repair to affect hormonal balance, but it needs to be done. Now, hormones are produced they're produced in the body in balance by what are known as enzymes. So enzymes modify these reactions in the body that make hormones. And there's one enzyme known as aromatase. Now this enzyme, you might have heard of it, it turns testosterone into estrogen. And aromatase is found all over the body. Now what's important practically to know is that fat produces aromatase. So if someone is either obviously obese or morbidly obese, or is just overweight, or they look like they're of normal weight, but a body composition reveals that thinner person, and I see this all the time, almost on a daily basis. There are many thin, fat people. They do not have the proper balance of lean body mass to fat tissue, and it's fats that produces, in part, aromatase. So too much body fat relative to lean body mass equals too much aromatase that produces too much estrogen, and too much estrogen tends to have a negative feedback effect upon testosterone. But guess what? Not always. The people that I see, I do not view them as textbooks. I think of what is known in endocrinology and hormone studies as a baseline. But I'm interested in finding out what's actually true in an individual. So now let's digress for a bit. Let's talk about hormones and cancers. So we know that when a woman or even a man has breast cancer and they remove the breast cancer or at least some of the cells during a biopsy, they test these cells to see if they have receptors on them for two main hormones, estrogen and, can you guess the other one? Progesterone. So if the breast cancer sample is a hormone receptor positive, then we know that hormones obviously play a major role in perpetuating or and in the cause of that cancer. So earlier I said to think of receptors like a lock and key. The lock is the receptor and the key is the hormone. Another way of thinking about it is, maybe even easier, is that receptors on tissues, breast tissue, brain tissue, colon tissue, liver, skin, you name it. These receptors are like ears or antennas that receive a signal. So in the case of a breast cancer positive receptor situations, when a person is receptor positive, we need to reduce the aromatase enzyme activity. So in medical circles, a variety of treatments are provided that are apparently to do that, but they also have extreme side effects in many cases. But foods, there's alfalfa, there's clover, there's kudzu, licorice root, legumes, for example, all of these may have an additive effect towards reducing the estrogen and progesterone receptivity in those individuals that have various cancers. Now think about this. This is another key clinical pearl. High amounts of estrogen, we know this, in the blood usually will increase a woman or a man's risk of breast cancer or ovarian cancer. But during someone's lifetime, we're also exposed, as I said earlier, to xenoestrogens, those super potent fake estrogens produced by industry like plastics manufacturing as one example. But also, if the woman experiences menses earlier in her life, let's say at age 10, and she doesn't enter menopause until she's, let's say, 55, 60, that is a long time exposure. And let's just assume for a minute to normal levels of estrogen. So the length of time of exposure and upon testing all normal levels can increase risk of a whole variety of cancers, like breast, ovarian, for example. So it doesn't just have to be high, right? I'm really saying the same thing in a couple of different ways. The levels can be normal for long periods of time, and the receptors can be heightened for whatever reason. We know that hormone replacement therapy certainly does increase the risk of breast cancer. And, in medical circles, they acknowledge that, but they say for some reason, based on some studies, that it's only if it's been used for 10 years or more. I mean, that's a ridiculous generalized statement, in my opinion. In the best case scenario, saying that you'd have to be on fake estrogens, like hormone replacement, they really should call that a hormone substitution, because they're not replacing your own hormones. They would have to be exposed for 10 years. The length of time that a person needs to be exposed to hormonal problems to cause a disease is relative to that person. It might be 2 years. It might be 3 years. So important to realize that you're not a textbook, but you knew that already. So in medicine, they focus on, and as they should, the hormone-sensitive dependent tissues. And they use various hormonal therapies, for example, various drugs that either stop the body from producing hormones or prevent the body from making the cancer cells division happen, because division is what causes and is the definition of cancer, particularly when those cells are abnormal. Natural therapies have also been shown to do this. But I want to introduce yet a third clinical pearl. Most individuals that I see, many at least, are taking the right natural substances. But the dosing is either way too small, it could never work, it could never reach therapeutic levels in the blood. The way to get around the very high levels of various herbs to actually affect estrogen-sensitive tissues to prevent hormone-related cancers and to deal with them is to think of synergism. So, for example, if you mix melatonin with boswellia and turmeric, smaller amounts of each of those three, if you give them together, will be needed to get the p- potential effect that you want. But if you only took any one of those, you would need grams of them. 1 gram equals 1,000 milligrams, many grams. And even if you could consume all of those, the body does have a limit of absorption. When these studies, many of them that use natural compounds to test whether or not they affect hormone-related cancers and affect hormones, they're introducing these levels into artificial situations which have nothing to do with your digestion, assimilation, and detoxification of hormones. So by the time you eat an herb or a food for hormonal effects, by the time it's digested, it's in the tiniest amount, and oftentimes it's just not enough. Enough study has been shown, at least to my satisfaction, that one must focus on synergism. So one more word about that. If you want to take, let's say, turmeric, and you need, let's just say, as an even number, 10,000 milligrams for an anti-estrogen effect, that would make anyone sick. But if you were to decrease that 10 times to a manageable amount, 1 gram, you could get the effect similar to 10 grams if you combine that 1 gram of turmeric with 10 other synergists, either vitamins, minerals, or herbs that will work together in such a way that a greater number of natural items will increase the effectiveness of each of those natural compounds, roughly equivalent to very, very high levels, which are just not achievable in many people. And even if you could, as I said, take turmeric as one example at a high, high, high dose, how are you going to get in everything else? So the blood detective analysis and those like me who do that type of personalized analysis can figure that out. When I'm dealing with an individual who wants to affect hormonal balance for any purpose whatsoever, there are certain fundamental things that I consider. One is that we live in a toxic environment, period. We're exposed to those xenoestrogens that I mentioned and other chemical estrogens like phthalates you'll find in various lotions and shampoos. There are certain exposures that I know, even though I don't test for them because they're not good tests for these chemicals, I just assume they're there. If you really wanted to know all about the different chemicals a man or woman might have been exposed to, it's probably best to do a fat biopsy because most of these xenoestrogens and abnormal hormones that we're exposed to in the environment, they are stored in fat tissue. So because testing isn't perfect, there are, again, certain assumptions I make, baseline, detox 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and everyone that I work with, I consider heavy metals. Now, heavy metals, as everyone knows, is big now in trending out there because of lead contamination, all these problems. This has always been an issue. And metals do disrupt potentially hormonal pathways. I mentioned cadmium earlier. Cadmium mimics estradiol. That's bad. I hear almost no one talking or testing for cadmium, but that you can check for that. I would never just check for one metal. And there's no perfect metal test. I might measure blood levels and urine levels of metals, so at least I know, you know, how much is being eliminated in the urine and how much is being stored in the body. Back to estrogen for a moment. There are so-called good estrogens, which would be the estriol form, and they're found in a variety of foods. Raspberries. I have a product known as Keto Raspberry Supreme that has a high level of natural estriol, and also strawberries and soybeans, assuming they're GMO-free organic, sweet potatoes, yams, eggplants, isoflavonoids. They have tiny amounts of estriol, but they have chemicals. This is important. All of these foods have compounds that look like estrogen. If you do not detoxify properly in your intestinal tract and your liver, you can turn those good compounds in these foods into bad estrogen. That is something you do not hear very often, but it is the truth. It is basic chemistry. These natural, so-called natural estrogens or estrogen-like precursors, remember they're precursors, so they're the building blocks of estrogen and other hormones. By the way, cholesterol is the basic structure of hormone in the body, and cholesterol forms pregnenolone. Pregnenolone forms testosterone. testosterone forms DHEA, and testosterone also in turn forms estrone, estradiol, and estriol. So why am I telling you this? If you back up on that pathway to basic estrogen, depending on how your body detoxifies, it'll push it towards good estrogens or bad estrogens. So when you're eating your broccoli and your cauliflower and your cabbage and your Brussels sprouts and your bok choy and your collard greens and your turnips and your kale, these are fundamentally important. But I believe that in order to push the healthy estrogens, you need amounts of these foods you couldn't possibly eat. So the superfood concentrates with the synergism built in. Again, my detox 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 products were made for those reasons, and there were other similar products out there. I base the doses on a lot of evaluations that I mentioned earlier, so we can do this right the first time. Let me talk now for the next 10 minutes until the show ends about specific nutrients and foods beyond just the general ones that I've mentioned so far. Everything I'm about to say will help to lower the levels of that nasty aromatase enzyme, will help promote lean body mass, help reduce inflammation, and help promote specific detox pathways. So there is what's known as the 2-hydroxy pathway. The 2-hydroxy pathway of estrogen metabolism is found in both the intestines and the liver. And the different nutrients that I'll be speaking about promote that good pathway. And then there is a bad estrogen pathway known as the 16-alpha-hydroxy pathway. So these pathways require specific nutrients at specific doses based on your metabolism and your percentage of muscle, water, and fat in your body. And that's easily tested. But also, your level of absorption or malabsorption is fundamental as well. Remember, I've said this in many other shows, we are not what we eat. We're what we absorb from what we eat. By the way, just a bit of information, because I'm getting emails here as we're speaking. People want to know where to email me questions. Email me at info@blooddetective.com, or you can post your questions on my website, either at blooddetective.com or at www.integratednutritionny.com. For those of you who would like to see me to work with me personally, you can call my office and schedule that either in person or by phone or through distance. I have many patient consultations for people in other states and even countries by calling 914-242-8844. So back to foods and supplements. Flax seeds, high amounts of omega-3, 6, and 9s. But flax seeds are important because they contain a lignin, and lignin is a certain type of a fiber that binds to estrogen in the gut. If it can bind to estrogen in the gut, it can bring the estrogens out of the body. If the estrogens do not exit the body, they're resorbed back into the body. And then your body's receptors get all screwed up, and all this negative feedback occurs. It's a mess. But flaxseed oil alone won't do it. I tend to recommend my fiber complex, which has a combination of both the water and non-water soluble types of fibers, which promote different types of hormonal metabolism and also work together. But what's very important about fibers is that they can reduce the amount of a very bad enzyme known as beta-glucuronidase. And this bad enzyme is important for regulating estrogen levels. And again, estrogen forms DHEA, and DHEA has a role in forming testosterone. And by the way, I should mention, DHEA, an adrenal hormone, which we've heard so much about in longevity, it can form estrogen, so it might be a bad idea for some individuals. All of the nutrition that I'm about to summarize must consider nutritional synergism. One of the ways of figuring that is through experience. Again, I've got 26 years of it, but also certain types of testing of certain metabolic pathways. Let's talk about folic acid. Active folic acid is the name of a active form of folic that I've produced in that supplement form. And that form of folic acid, which is a methylated form, particularly when used with the right type and combination of magnesium, B6, and calcium and essential fatty acids. I like the DHA fatty acid. Remember, DHA is a fatty acid, omega-3. DHEA is an adrenal hormone, which sometimes is bad to use. But folic acid in the form of the L5-methyltetrahydrofolate, the active form you'll find in my active folate product, has been shown to manage all sorts of hormonal imbalances, but not alone. It needs to have B12 and the methylated form of B12 taken along with the activated form of B6, which is called pyridoxal 5-phosphate. Folic acid, B12, B6, the other nutrients I just mentioned, they're known to potentially decrease gene activity and affect the estrogen receptor by quieting down that estrogen receptor so the body is not so strongly influenced by the presence of estrogen, whether the estrogen level is high or low. Remember, it's the receptor that determines what your body takes in. I also use my DIM Supreme product. And DIM is the AKA for diindolmethane. That's a very powerful component or compound found in cruciferous vegetables. But if you have hypothyroid, you don't want to be consuming cruciferous vegetables. So you see how this has to be figured out personally? But the DIM is in cruciferous vegetables, you know, the broccoli, the cauliflower, for example, and it reduces the aromatase activity. DIM has been shown in lots of studies to block tissue estrogen receptors, testosterone and estrogen receptors, DHEA, that adrenal hormone receptor. DIM has been shown to be valuable in all of those areas. Even green tea. I have a green tea product that I produce because of the studies I read of how green tea and all the years of using it that have been shown to also have a different way of blocking aromatase. Sometimes you have to deal with a problem from several different directions. Melatonin, for example, which needs to be, you know, based again and taken correctly, generally at night, has been shown to block aromatase. Very effective studies with using pharmaceutical levels and grade melatonin, maybe very differently, a different dosage than what you might be taking now, if you're taking it at all. Usually around 12 milligrams on average has been shown to increase the blood levels to effective levels to block aromatase. It also, again, depends on your absorption. Melatonin has been shown to reduce the production of the beta estradiol, that bad estrogen. And by the way, melatonin is produced by your pineal gland, excuse me. And also, if you have sleep issues, your circadian rhythm is all off, your melatonin will be off. Generally, it'll be low. Your cortisol level might be high or even normal, but the ratio is off, and that pineal gland will not make enough of melatonin. So it's important to time that melatonin correctly. Turmeric. There's lots of controversy about turmeric. It might cause higher estrogen or cause estrogen-related cancers, or promote them, or prevent them, that is. So that needs to be based on the individual. Milk thistle. I use my milk thistle product because milk thistle has been shown to improve the metabolism of phase two estrogen detox, what's called the C2 pathway. Everyone interested in hormone balancing must take an activated multivitamin mineral, not just any multivitamin mineral. You want to have the nutrients activated because if you're relying on your intestines and your liver to activate those minerals, you might be in trouble. So it needs to have, particularly B6 has to be activated, B12, folic acid, the selenium in the form of selenomethionine, zinc has to be activated forms. Probiotics, super important for hormone balancing. But I always combine my Superbugs probiotics with my detox immunoglobulin G and my fiber complex, plus my detox 1-5 products, because these ingredients, these compounds and studies, not my particular products, but these compounds have been studied to be blockers and regulators of enzymes. They modify the receptor response. They help the specific detox pathways, and there are three major ones, by the way, in the liver, detox phase 1, 2, and 3. They all require different nutrition. Vitamin E, very important for estrogen metabolism, between 400 and 800 IUs in a pharmaceutical grade. That's all that I use. And salt palmetto, not just for men with prostate enlargement or prostate cancer. Salt palmetto, research has shown very interestingly that salt palmetto is a very effective inhibitor of yet another enzyme I haven't mentioned yet, known as 5-alpha reductase. and that helps to reduce estrogens and testosterone. Very, very important. Mexican, they use drugs like finasteride or, you know, Proscar to do this, but salt palmetto has been shown to be effective as well. Getting back to probiotics for a minute, I flood the intestines with probiotics with what I call a probiotic loading protocol, which I combine with my detox immunoglobulin G. It's important that we fix low stomach acid, enhance pancreatic enzyme activity, because remember, what you absorb and what you eat affects your hormones. We need to look at stress modification, sleep issues, which I've said, and modify the inflammatory process. So this has been a loaded show today, and I thank you so much for listening and suggesting this topic. So for those, again, who want to contact me, my name is Dr. Michael Wald. I'm the supervisor of longevity at Integrated Nutrition of Mount Kisco. You can reach me for either a phone or an in-person consultation at 914-242-8844. Please give me your questions at blooddetective.com. Post them on the blog. The next show topic is all about metals. Metals are the disruptor of various cell functions, and there's stuff you haven't heard, just like today's show. Thank you so much for joining me. And once again, my name is Dr. Michael Wald, and thanks for listening today to Ask the Blood Detective.
Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. If you Catholic girl, start much too late.